All right, folks, this is
baseball.
Damn it, Jeff. This is Matthew Kruth, my digital left, who's yelling and interrupting all the times, Jeff Sullivan.
Hello.
We are Lookout Landing, and this is our very final Lookout Landing podcast of the 2011 season. That was quite a season, Jeff. What did you think about it?
I thought that it was short.
It was short. You know, it just flew right by. It felt like just yesterday was not even baseball season, and then today it's over.
Yeah, it felt like just yesterday I was going to bed on the eve of the season opener, and now it's like, wow, I can't believe what a whirlwind tour. And I mean, to do that to the Orioles in the ALDS, it's revenge for 1997, you know? It's like, fuck you, Jimmy Key.
Yeah, and the way Mike Mussina came out of retirement to pitch that one game, and then his arm just flew off. I mean, I gotta say, I don't like to take delight in injuries and stuff like that, but that really cured a lot of long, bitter moments held in for the last 14 years.
Yeah, I mean, you can throw knuckle curves all you want, but you can't throw them when you're 75 years old or whatever Mike Mussina is now. I think, you know, off the top of my head, I feel like Mike Mussina might actually be a full decade younger than Jamie Moyer, but I don't know. But it could be close. And that's just another... Compare Jamie Moyer to anybody, and the result is, wow, that's incredible about Jamie Moyer. It really doesn't matter what the name... This is doesn't have anything to do with the season. We didn't prepare for this bit, by the way. This is totally off the cuff. It's baseball season now, folks.
Okay, in reality, yes. Baseball is ongoing. That matters.
Yeah. I know that
it matters because I'm kind of half paying attention to the Angels and Royals game, and the Royals are doing their best to screw it up. So That's how I know this baseball counts.
Yeah, this baseball counts because you're watching the Royals game. I'm sitting here watching Pat Neshek come out of the bullpen for the Padres. I didn't realize Pat Neshek was healthy and pitching for the Padres. And for those of you who don't know, Pat Neshek used to be good, and he was one of the first internet popular baseball players because he had a blog presence. Then he got on Twitter and he was good, and he would write back to fans and interact with them. Then he got hurt, and then he sucked, and then he got cut, and apparently he's with the Padres now. But I'm watching him face Albert Pujols, so this is a lot of fun.
Interesting. I do remember seeing when he got picked up by the Padres, and I still in my mindset, it was like, oh yeah, I mean, I knew he was, I don't think he was just good, I think he was really excellent, and then he got hurt, and he faded from view, pretty sure it was a elbow surgery or something, something that took him out for a year.
I think it was Tommy John.
That's a fair bet. And then the Padres picked him up for, I think, like a minor league deal, or a league minimum, or something, you know, just the standard veteran doesn't get any money anymore deal, and I saw that and I was kind of like really wishing the Mariners that niche, because wow, our bullpen is interesting.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about it, you look at the bullpen now and it's easy to look at these names and be like, hey, in August and September or even like July, this could be a really good group, because in my head I'm thinking, okay, David Artema's okay, Brandon League he's pretty good, we can have Sean Kelly back, we can have Josh Luque pitching well. We can have Tom Wilhelmsen. He has good stuff. We could have Dan Cortez. Like, wow, look at all of these hard-throwing, good right-handed relievers we have. But then you remember, okay, Artema, hurt, League, iffy, Kelly, hurt, Luque, nobody knows, Cortez, wild, Wilhelmsen, wild. Like, this could be really bad. And that doesn't even consider the Chris Ray and the Jamie Wright and the Aaron Laffey, who is still on the team and is our only bullpen lefty, and he's going to get a lot of games. Aaron Laffey is going to get a lot of games.
Yeah, it could get very, very bad.
Yes.
From the start.
Of course, as we established with our 2011 in review, it did not. But for the time being, we can pretend that, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of responsibility gets immediately doled out. I think I read Eric Wedge say something about the veterans going in the later innings, which means we're going to have Lee closing to start. We'll probably have Chris Ray as the setup man to start. And we'll probably have Jamie Wright as like the seventh inning guy to start. I don't know what Luque and Wilhelmsen will be asked to do from the beginning. I don't know how much responsibility they'll be given. And they'll get their high leverage innings, but I wonder how long it's going to be before the team's like, oh yeah, Jamie Wright is still Jamie Wright. We probably shouldn't have done that again.
Yeah, I think it won't be very long before Josh Luque elevates himself into a setup role, if only for the fact that he can, well, he just looks good. Mm-hmm. I mean, he looks you know, yeah, we have no idea, but let's not undersell just how dominant he was in the minor leagues in the last year and a half, something like that, however long it's been since he's been pitching again.
And with Chris Ray, it's weird because there's been all this talk about how, oh, his fastball is just starting to come back and he's building off surgery, but like last year he was supposedly back from where he was the year before. And last year he was bad. Like, he didn't strike people out and he walked a lot of guys. He had a low ERA, but that doesn't matter. He wasn't a very good pitcher. So it's like, I can understand maybe thinking his numbers weren't up to the quality of his stuff and that he was kind of a fluke and he'll be better than that, but there's no reason to think that we're in for like some Chris Ray rejuvenation. Even when he was good, he wasn't very good. And now it's been a lot of time, so I'm a little nervous about him because I know he throws like a mid-90s fastball, but that doesn't make somebody good. We've seen a lot of Jeff Fassero threw in the mid-90s, and we remember what – did he? I might just be making that up.
I don't know.
I think he did at one point. But Chris Ray, fast fastball, whatever. Got to see it.
Yeah, although I was going to say, was Chris Ray actually bad last year?
No. His ERA was good. It was in the threes, but he had 31 strikeouts, 25 walks in 55 innings.
Right, okay.
And he's not a ground ball guy.
Well, two of the walks were intentional.
You look at the numbers the year before, way better strikeout rate, comparable walk rate. His ERA was literally twice as bad as it was in 2010, so that's trouble. But, I mean, the whole line about how much progress Ray made between 2009 and 2010, I don't actually see it in the numbers. And if he feels that way, then whatever, but I am not expecting Chris Ray to wow me this year. I'm open to the possibility, but I don't see an indication that it's going to happen.
That's true. His swinging strike numbers were really off-putting last year. They just, I mean, he used to be a pretty, I don't want to say dynamite pitcher, but he was pretty good for a reliever, and then with the injury kind of sunk to average, and then last year sunk to way below average. So, but at the meantime, he did get his velocity back, so that's kind of a weird maybe. I guess I'm just kind of hoping that the micro results are kind of lagging behind the stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it certainly wouldn't be the first person who, coming off of an injury, got his stuff back before he got his results back. But hopefully he doesn't implode because, yeah, he's probably going to be counted on for a lot of high-leverage innings to start with. And he's probably, I think, the de facto eighth-inning guy, which sometimes sees higher leverage than the closer.
Yeah.
So it's not like our offense is going to be scoring a lot of runs.
I'll say this for Chris Ray. And again, I feel bad for having referred to spring training stats so often just because we all know the limitations. But in 9 innings, Chris Ray did strike out 8 guys and have 1 walk. So he certainly earned the job. But at the same time, Jamie Wright threw 12 shutout innings with 1 walk and 9 strikeouts. We know he's not going to be doing that again. It's not like Jamie Wright learned a new pitch, or more realistically, 4 new pitches.
So, maybe he did. Maybe he did.
I mean, I guess you...
This could be the year when he's 38. Finally woke up and like, oh, shit, I should throw a cutter.
Look what I can do. Wow, this is... I don't have to lead the league in wild pitches. Anyway, I guess one thing to consider when you're talking about relievers, late-inning relievers in spring training, is that a lot of time they will be throwing the later innings in spring training when the other team will have a lot more of its scrubs in. So
you're saying that they were facing the Sean Kazmars of the league and maybe we shouldn't be paying attention to his strike and walk out?
Because Sean Kazmar doesn't strike out, and he was a phenomenal utility infielder, and I'm disappointed to see him go. But, yes, other teams' equivalents of, like, the Josh Wilson's more, right. More horribly.
Speaking of the final roster getting set, I'm interested. I know the minor league season doesn't start for another week or so, right? I'll be quite interested, at least for about 2 minutes, to take a look at the Tacoma kind of starting lineups and rotations and bullpens once they get that settled out, because we certainly had an overabundance of the utility infielders, kind of outfielders, obviously the remnants of the pile. Some of them left, but most of them just kind of left to Tacoma. So it'd be kind of – I'm intrigued to find how they sort all that stuff out and figure out who actually is in the rotation of Tacoma. We talked about this prior, and also just figuring out that infield is – because they're going to have potentially Mike Karp, Matt Mangini,
Liddy.
Josh Josh Wilson's completely gone now. Alex Liddy and Luis Rodriguez stayed up. So I guess who's playing shortstop?
Kazmar is probably going to play shortstop.
Oh, right. Kazmar is going to play shortstop, Ackley at second base. And I guess now that I think about it, because Josh Wilson's gone and Luis Rodriguez is with the team, that really cleared up a lot of the logjam. And it really just comes down to Mike Karp and Matt Mangini, and I guess Tui.
Mm-hmm.
But they have first base and DH. And who the hell cares about Tui anyways?
I'll tell you who. Way too many people.
He might get some outfield time. I mean, there's... Yeah. There's Wilson, Hallman, is Chavez going to be in Tacoma, I think, possibly?
Oh, my God. People are going to yell. I don't know. I feel like he is, right? Him and Peguero, but I don't actually know.
Yeah. Jay, who's going to start in the
Well, I'm Jay, and I'm going to give you mine. And you remember that Mangini's going to start the year on the DL anyway, so that'll clear it up at least temporarily. By the way, this has nothing to do with nothing except the game that I'm watching. But, you know, the Cardinals supposedly have the best fans in baseball, right? They're in the 11th inning of their home opener. There, it's still like the early evening, and maybe like half the stadium is gone.
You know, I don't even know if half the stadium's gone because I luckily have access to DirecTV and the MLB Extra Innings package. So I've been watching the game since they started and kind of flipping around the channels. And it is a theme that I've noticed all across. Now, maybe it has something to do with day games, but I don't think that should hold anybody back. I've not seen a sold-out game so far. I'm sure attendance-wise they're going to announce them all as sellouts, but they've been very obviously not sellouts. Large swaths of seats just completely unfilled. And not just kind of the usual, like the seats behind home plate at the Yankee Stadium, which probably cost four countries per ticket. Those were very sparsely filled, which is not a huge surprise. I'm sure they're probably still sold to ginormous corporations, but it's not just those. It's outfield seats, the cheaper seats. Still, you could see that they were not filled, and it wasn't just the coming back from mid inning. There's a chance that people aren't still up getting beers or whatever, so that they can tolerate watching the Washington Nationals get shut out. It was an entire section that was clearly not been sat in yet, and so it does not surprise me to hear that the Cardinals also are suffering that same issue.
That's weird, though. I mean, new-ish stadium, city with a lot of people without jobs, a lot of baseball dedication.
Come on. What the hell?
Like, the Padres are so anti-exciting that they literally drive people away from road stadiums.
That could be a possibility. But I don't understand it because, I mean, I've been to enough Mariner opening days in the recent years, and up until this season they've all been day games and sometimes at odd days, like a Thursday or something like that. And they never looked empty. I know they've always been officially sold out, and they've looked it. So, and it's not like we play exciting baseball or exciting teams, so suck it up everywhere else in the country.
It's interesting that we're having this conversation, and this is before Oakland's home opener, when it'll be like, whoa, baseball literally drew zero fans to this game. Without fans, is there a game?
These stats still don't count.
Turns out we've been playing in a three-team division for like 15 years.
So speaking of Oakland, we can talk about the phenomenal Twitter account of Brandon McCarthy. So I know it's kind of partly your job, or at least it helps with your writing material, that you follow a lot of athletes on Twitter.
Sort of. I really don't. I have a list, or I subscribe. Oh, the Padres just lead in sloppy play. That's why the fans didn't show up to St. Louis anyway. So I subscribe to a list of like players on Twitter, but I only follow a few. And what I mean by a few is Brett Anderson, because he's amazing. And it was Brett Anderson who inadvertently tipped me off to Brandon McCarthy. And I don't want to, set the bar too high here, because Brandon McCarthy just started tweeting, and if you didn't know what I'm talking about, then I'm sorry for this conversation. So he's still very, very new, but there's a lot of promise there. It's rare to find an athlete who's smart and funny and clever and,
self-aware.
And yeah, I mean, it's just a shame that the good Twitterers generally have to be pretty bad players.
I don't even care. I don't think it would mean anything more to me if he was awesome.
I guess he'd be more popular than.
I mean, he's gonna get more popular anyway. It's just by the dint of the fact that he's got a personality. How many followers does Brett Anderson have?
Anderson, I believe, is up to like 7,000. And when I first saw McCarthy, he had like 300. Now he's taken off.
But
You're welcome.
It's amazing to me. It's so right. I wonder how much it's just because of like your post, and then that suddenly getting the traction around the internet. But it just occurred to me what after reading through his feed, and was like, wow, this isn't just fawning over an athlete. This guy's actually, I mean, he seems like he'd be a funny guy to hang around with, just cracking jokes and whatever. But he's so in contrast to Brett Anderson. And really, if you don't know Brett Anderson's Twitter feed, go read Brett Anderson's Twitter feed. And then go read Brendan McCarthy's, and then go read Brett Anderson's again. Like, it's mind-blowing. It's like the Goofus and Gallant of what to do with Twitter.
You know, hold on. I have to interject here because I personally, it's beyond the point of thinking this is, think it's funny to be ironic. I actively enjoy Brett Anderson and how every single Twitter post that he writes is a complete waste of my time. And not a complete waste of my time in the way that, like, he's spamming me with, like, charity shit or retweeting other stuff. No, they're all personal messages that he writes out that mean absolutely nothing to nobody. Nap time. Great, thanks. Love TV show.
I know what you mean, but where I'm going with this is that they're such polar opposites, and what slays me about it is that Brett Anderson's Twitter feed is so Oakland. It is everything. If I was trying to explain the Oakland Athletics and how they make us feel emotionally to somebody, I'd point them to Brett Anderson's Twitter and be like, this is what watching the Oakland Athletics is like. It's 3 hours every game of, hey guys, what's up? Anybody know where to get a fish sandwich?
Joe Dirt, all right.
And then somehow on the same team is Brendan McCarthy. Like, do you think they, like, what is their clubhouse interaction like? Because in my mind, since I know nothing else about them, Brett Anderson's Twitter feed reflects Brett Anderson at all times of the day. He speaks in a monotone. He barely makes eye contact with people.
And Brendan McCarthy is so smart and nerdy that he wears like three pairs of glasses at once, and he's just like, hey, clever stuff. And Brett Anderson's like, whatever, queer. He does that little dismissive wanking motion, then he like high fives whoever the fuck else is on that team in white and stupid. Which is all of them, by the way. I don't know anything about Trevor Cahill, and I mean Trevor implies one sort of person, and then Cahill, I haven't figured it out, so I've never actually listened to anything. I've never read about Trevor Cahill. He's actually another good reflection of the Oakland A's, just because he's been established and I know nothing about him. Wow. And as far as I'm concerned, he has.
We also know about Dallas Braden.
Oh my God.
So, I mean, the way you're thinking about it, it's clear that, Brett Anderson and Dallas Braden in the kind of, situation that you just came up with, that's who he would high five.
Oh yeah. No, Braden and Anderson are total best buds. There's no question.
So it really made my whatever day that was. Was that yesterday?
That was yesterday.
That was like 9 Lookout Landing posts ago.
For God's sake, we got the attention of Brendan McCarthy's wife.
So the crazy thing, at least about spring training and baseball and this opening day thing, at least for me, is like pitchers and catchers reported 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago. And ever since then, it's just been this slow, steady crawl towards opening day, but it never felt like the excitement was never building for me. Mm-hmm. You'd kind of hope maybe it would, like, you know, it'd be like this flat line all throughout January and February. Then you'd pass this mile marker of pitchers and catchers reporting, and then you'd begin this kind of slow, steady, linear climb up to the point of peak of opening day. That's kind of like maybe what you would think, but for me, it's been very parabolic rise, all centered in the last like 3 days, basically since Monday, when I kind of realized, oh crap, opening day is Thursday. Like, spring training doesn't keep going for 3 more weeks. Maybe part of it is just having to do all the writing and stuff, and just there were things that I've been planning or have been in the back of my mind since the like 2010 ended, so like June. Mm-hmm. That it was like, oh, I should post something about this before the season next season starts. And then all of a sudden, I have 2 days. So it's been a kind of fever pitch of incentive and emotion, and I feel really pumped up.
Yeah,
it's getting excited for this.
It's interesting with the spring training being as long as it is. You start out, spring training starts, and you're like, all right, yeah, cool, baseball's back. It's not really, but it's back, and I can't wait for the season. And then you get to, like, the third week, and you're like, And then the fourth week, it's like, okay, you know what? Fuck it. Fuck baseball. This is just the worst. I'm not paying attention to it. I'm putting my foot down. This is stupid. This is a waste of my time. You lose so much excitement for actual opening day because you think, you know what? Opening day is going to be more of this stupid, menial bullshit where the Mariners aren't going to score, and they're going to frustrate us. It's not going to be fun to spend 3 hours every day watching them. I'm going to fucking paint. I'm going to go do something creative with them, do some crafts. And then it's like you get to this week, and it's like, okay, we have a spring training game on Tuesday. Whoa, last Cactus game? Cactus game of the year? Where did this come from? What do you mean opening day coming? Oh, shit! So you kind of like you bottom out from the excitement. So it's like I think there is sort of a peak at the start of spring training, and it rises a little bit, and then it dips. It sharply dips towards, like, the last third of spring training. And then you get to that, like, day or two between the end of spring training and the first day of the season. It's like,
Yeah.
As soon as you stop caring, then it kind of feels fresh again. Like, okay, that's dumb, but now it actually counts. So yeah, it's still the same menial bullshit. But, hey, if the Mariners can play better than 500 like they did in spring training, I'll care still in June.
That would be nice.
Yes.
We're shooting high in 2011. We just want to care.
Here's the thing, and I know maybe we say this every year, but I either want the Mariners to be really good and hang in the race much of the year, or I want them to drop out in a hurry so that when I make plans for the weekends, I don't feel guilty. Like, I want to go camping a bunch this summer because it's nice up here. But, like, yeah, I don't have to feel bad about it if the Mariners are 10-65. Well, actually, that would be historic. If they're like 30-45, and it's like, oh, this again. All right. Yeah, see, you can. I'll let Matthew write about Luke French's 5 innings. But instead, yeah, I either want to miss it or not miss it at all.
I understand that, and I think I've probably felt that. I would have totally agreed with you last year. But after having done that now 2 out of the last 3 years, I really, really don't want them to fall out of it right away. I want to at least care through June.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Or at least into mid-June, somewhere around there. If fate decrees that they have to be bad, if they have to go 70-92 this year, can they at least go 30-30 and then, you know, 40-62 the rest of the way? At least give me, because I don't know if I could if they just bottom out again. I say this, but it's not like there's any way I'm going to stop watching this team or caring or writing about baseball, but it's going to be even harder the second time. As apathetic as 2010 made me, and I felt like I kind of built up a shell about sports again after the feel-good 2009 season across not just the Mariners, but across a bunch of other sports, and it kind of sucked me back in a little bit, and then 2010 reminded me that no, this is you still live in Seattle, and you still root for these sports teams. If 2011 mirrored 2010 again, I mean, it'd be like, I guess it'd feel like running a marathon that you didn't know you were going to run, and then finishing the marathon, and then you look back and you're like, oh, I mean, shit, I had to run a marathon. That sucked. What the hell? But I just ran a marathon. That's cool. All right, you know, I can't feel my legs anymore, but I accomplished something. All right, time to go home. And there's a big-ass mountain in the way now. And you got to climb over the mountain. That's what 2011 will feel like if 2010 if repeats.
And there's no view. The only stuff on the mountain and around the mountain are warehouses and strip malls. And when you get to the top, there's clouds, and it's really, really hot, and the clouds are trapping the heat. And the mountain trail is also 26.2 miles long. And there's stuff chasing you, so you have to run it.
Right. Getting through 2010 sucked, but now it kind of feels like, all right, I got done with that. I should be rewarded somehow, and an off season isn't a reward. It's just kind of pause, especially our off season.
Yeah, the reward for following and sticking with bad baseball is not no baseball.
Right.
That's just nothing. That is literally nothing. The reward should be better baseball. And you know what? Good news. It would be hard not to have better baseball or at least more entertaining baseball. I mean, a lot of that, if it goes right post, it was clearly kind of exaggerated. Like, I don't think the Mariners are going to win the division by a game, but there is reason, I guess there's reason for every team to hope. I'm talking myself down from my own optimism right now on the podcast, but it's like there, who knows? Maybe. That's all. Right now, we can sit here. We lost 101 games last year, and we can still think, maybe.
Yeah. And not in the Royals or Pirates version of maybe, either. I mean, close. We're close to that version of maybe. I don't want to get people start thinking that we have our heads in the clouds again, although we often have our heads in the clouds, because it's cloudy all the damn time.
And I'm tall. I guess right. Heads in the clouds, yeah. Are we just... If I said, oh, man, you know, Jack really has his head in the clouds all the time, you'd be like, holy shit, Jack is like 5,000 feet tall. That's incredible. How do you know him? It's like what that really means. If I say, man, you know, Matthew, I think you have your head in the clouds today. What I mean is it's foggy today. That's what that means. It's just talking about the weather.
So
where did that come from? What were we talking about? Oh, optimism.
Optimism, right. So... We are close to that level of very little chance in hell. Mm-hmm. But we are maybe like we're a level above complete hopelessness and delusion to think that we could win the division. And so obviously both of us agree that the Rangers are the best team. But they have some issues, especially with the back of their rotation. And even still, that's kind of – even the front of the rotation is kind of relying on Colby Lewis to stay 2010 Colby Lewis and C.J. Wilson to stay 2010 C.J. Wilson, where I don't think if they both kind of collapse, I don't think you would look back on that and be like, wow, that came out of nowhere. Or that was a huge surprise that Colby Lewis reverted to a high 4 ERA and C.J. Wilson got hurt. Mm-hmm. And if those happen, what do the Rangers have? Then they're pinning their hopes kind of on Brandon Webb coming back and Scott Feldman.
So this is a way I like to think of it, and I talk about this sort of thing pretty often, but if I said the Mariners have a, I don't know, 4% chance of winning the division, do you think that would sound reasonable, ballpark? Just four or five?
Yeah, I would say that's reasonable. I might put it a little bit higher, but under 10.
Yeah, I agree with you, but just for the sake of putting this in perspective, Jack Cust has hit a home run in 4.4% of his career plate appearances. And when Jack Cust hits a home run, it's rare, but is it surprising? No. I mean, these things happen a lot. Jack Cust hits a lot of home runs. Granted, he gets a lot more opportunities than the Mariners. Right. The Mariners will get one opportunity. But it's like, that's what it is. Right now, ballpark, we're sitting here and we're thinking, okay, Jack Cust has one at bat over the next 6 months. Is he going to hit a home run? If he hits a home run, we win. Sort of thing.
That's an interesting way of thinking about it, because it is. It's kind of a distilling something where you have you're right, it's the same odds, and it's just that it's a one sample kind of thing, but that doesn't make it any less likely to occur. That we just, I think, it's an interesting way of thinking about it, because we kind of become immune to rare events when we have so many trials, but that doesn't make them any less rare to occur.
Yeah, I mean, if you have something that only happens one in every million times, but then you do it 100,000 times a day, it's going to happen pretty often, and you'll grow immune to it. But
if if humans had a lifespan of 1,000 years, the Mariners winning the division would not be rare. I mean, it would still be rare, but we wouldn't be like freaking out over it.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, so you can make something like, I don't know, 5% sound optimistic, like I just did, or you can also be like 5%. That is. That's like 1/6 the odds of Ichiro getting a hit. It's like, wow, that's really not much. So percentages, you can look at it from either side. But being the sunny, always optimistic individual that I am, I prefer to look at the upside and see that, yeah, maybe this year. I'm excited, not just because of the chance to win, but because of some of the players we have on the team and coming up. Even if they're bad, this isn't going to be like a 2008 kind of bad. There are good players that we'll get to watch. Well, granted, there's going to be Brendan Ryan at bats in between some of them, but talent. We'll get to analyze stuff for the future instead of analyzing Roy Corcoran.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that.
At least, at the very least, we can talk about how maybe we can send Michael Pineda down now if he sucks.
Right, yeah. Although, if you're such a sunny individual, then you really do need to get your head in the clouds, because maybe that will blow these clouds away.
I like clouds. Well, also, if
I have a sunny contradiction in terms.
As a sunny individual, I don't want to clear the clouds because that will expose me to the greater sun, and then I will feel bad about myself. So as long as there's a cloud cover, I can be confident that I'm the biggest sun in the area.
Okay.
Yeah. I do not watch the Science Channel. Gets me down on myself. As a giant ball of flaming hydrogen. Guest speaker on the podcast, a sun. Oh my god, this fishing is wearing me out. We can relate because fishing sounds like fishing, and fishing wears me out because you're out in the sun all day. Man, this is just, we need to shower. What are we talking about next?
Okay, well, I was gonna pose a question to you because, so Felix, now we've seen Felix kind of be dominant Felix for the last two seasons. Some of the macro results, the win-loss record in the ERA changed in 2010, but for the most part, he was very similar between 2009 and 2010. And he has such skill level that it's always just kind of, it's kind of surprising even when he's mundane, when he has like an average start, it feels weird.
Yeah, like Sabathia today, 3 runs, 6 innings. Same with Verlander. Like, we expect more than that from Felix. That's where our standards are now.
A question that came into my mind today, who do you think is more likely to perform exactly as we expect them to, almost kind of assume that they will in this season? Felix or Ichiro?
Probability-wise, I have to say Ichiro.
Of course, probability-wise. This is not obviously a objective question, but it's more like, because it struck me that I was thinking about Felix, and I realized that emotionally I was feeling about him in 2011 like I do with Ichiro now, where mm-hmm. It's almost like I don't need to watch Ichiro because in my head I'm penciling him in 335, 218 hits. 7 home runs, 40 stolen, but you know, it's like, why even play Ichiro? And it was interesting to me that I kind of reached the same level with Felix, even though obviously I know pitchers are more volatile and other factors, and also that, well, I'm much more of a pitching analyst than a hitting analyst, so analyzing Felix never gets old to me. There's always new things, like the post I made about his 0-2 count approach. Uh-huh. I don't really have anything like that with Ichiro because I don't know why. Maybe I should do that. Maybe I should write more about Ichiro. But anyways, I was just wondering, now that I've kind of explained what I'm thinking about, do you find yourself in kind of a similar stance, or are you still kind of cautious and more still in awe of Felix every time he pitches?
Honestly, so I can tell you that I have one opinion based on probability, but yeah, I actually do. I sit here and I basically take Felix for granted. It's about the level of dominance more than whether he'll dominate. And then with Ichiro, I keep thinking in the back of my head, you know, he's getting old. He can't last forever. Ichiro could fall off the cliff at any moment. He doesn't, so while Ichiro has been more established for a longer period of time and is by far the better bet, yeah, I see what you mean. And, it's weird the way that the rational side of the brain is disconnected there from the whatever side of the brain it is that's making me feel otherwise.
I think that's the bottom left hexagonal mass down there is the other place.
No,
that's
where
thoughts live.
No, I have a lesion there.
Well, maybe that's why you're so optimistic all the time.
That's true. I'm just filled with lesions in my pessimistic cortexes. I had an MRI and they're like, wow, this guy is positive because of problems in his brain. Yeah, it was a House episode. He was always going after people for being brave, and he was like, no, there's something wrong with your brain. Well, yeah, it turns out I'm happy all the time because there's something wrong with my brain. If you're a happy person, you should get an MRI. And you should get it at Harborview Neurological. Shit, what's the sponsorship tagline?
I don't know.
Harborview shout out. There you go. Go get your MRI at Harborview if you're rich. Felix, it's weird that I do. You and I both kind of take him for granted, but maybe that is just because we spend so much time analyzing him and we see how dominant he is. I mean, people aren't going to catch up to his stuff. There's no reason to think that that's going to happen, at least anytime soon. So it's really with Felix, and I already hate that I'm going to say this, but it's really, he's either great or he's hurt.
Yeah. So there was one time I played in the Lookout Landing Baseball Mogul Online League, and I played as the Mariners. I don't know if it was a fluke thing of the particular league or whatever, but Felix ended up becoming the greatest pitcher in Major League history because he never got hurt. And I managed to keep him pitching until he was about 42 years old, and he up and retired. But he retired basically second all-time in games started, innings pitched, third all-time in strikeouts, had got over 400 wins, only behind Nolan Ryan, I think, in strikeouts, only behind whoever in innings pitched.
I want to be interested to see where this is going.
Well, so I know this is it's bordering a little bit on fantasy talk, but my point is that that is always kind of stuck in my head of like, that is literally best case Felix Hernandez. There's short of, oh, and also he stopped by my house and gave me his $100 million. There's no Felix Hernandez that was better than the baseball mogul Felix Hernandez that I saw. And I was thinking about it recently and kind of looking at how his stuff compares to other pitchers. And not just like his strikeout rates or whatever, but just looking at his individual pitches. And you're right, his stuff is not going to go away because he's got too much. He's got 5-plus pitches. It really is, at this point, Felix just needs to go on cruise control and stay healthy. And he could just sit there and repeat 2009 and 2010 over and over and over again. And if he does that until you look at how long pitchers pitch, not even these days, but you try to forecast that out 15 years now into the future, it's not even unrealistic for me to look back and be like, yeah, I mean, well, he's not going to win 400 games because the Mariners, but that he could end up incredibly high on innings pitched, strikeouts, games started, well, modern day shutouts, complete games, those kind of things. We could be in 15 years looking back on him and saying, based on the era in which he pitched, Felix is a top 5 pitcher of all time. And I don't think there's no more qualifications to that other than if he stays healthy.
Yeah.
It's not like he needs to take any more steps. I think he has reached that level. Whereas now all he literally needs to do is just go out and pitch.
Yeah. Like the Roy Halladay level, only like 10 years younger.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know what I would do? Instead of signing one minor league free agent every year, what I would do is schedule Felix for a new MRI every month, just as like a little checkup during the season, just to make sure. And you know, like if you see something wrong, then you kind of hit the brakes and you're like, whoa, all right, step off. Heal up a little bit, and we're going to spare. Maybe they already do this. They don't do this during the year. Maybe it's considered medically unnecessary. But like, why not?
Well, here's the why not. There's actually MRIs and medical scans are actually pretty radioactive.
All right, the one that isn't radioactive.
X-rays.
No. What's the difference between MRIs and CT scans? One of them is substantially more radioactive than the other, and I can't remember what
A CT scan is the more radioactive, I'm fairely certain.
Okay. But I've had a lot of scans of my brain, so now I'm concerned.
Yeah.
All right. So they use, instead of signing 5 minor league free agents a year, they put some money towards developing a non-radioactive imaging machine, and then they put the rest towards giving Felix getting some images every month. So you've made the sound. Whatever. If Felix gets cancer when he's 50, I don't care. He'll be done. We only care about these players when they're players. They're not people. They're tools that generate numbers and make us happy on weeknights after we come home from work and drink our Miller Lite in the sofa and call them bums. That's all players are.
Fair enough. So I actually, touching back on Ichiro, the thought that occurred to me is, I realize that when you're talking about how you have that little voice that's whispering, well, you know, Ichiro is getting older and he can't keep this up forever, although who knows? I think I want to kind of revise it. I do always share that kind of off-season anxiety about Ichiro. Mm-hmm. I guess Ichiro, every off-season, it's kind of like, in a sense, in a much smaller sense, kind of like Doug Fister, because I don't trust how Doug Fister succeeds. And even though everything on paper looks repeatable and there wasn't anything that jumped out in terms of like extraordinary luck from Doug Fister last season, I have no faith that Doug Fister is not going to be terrible.
Yeah,
I need to see Doug Fister pitch in a major league game that counts. And I need to see him start a couple times and can be like, okay, somehow this still works. And then I can be relaxed. I think it's, for me, it's the same way with Ichiro. I need to get through like the first 20 games of the year and not watch him look utterly lost and then been like, okay, yeah, no, Ichiro's fine. And it won't really matter that he's hitting 100 or 400. it'll all be kind of like how he looks at the plate and watching his bat control and like how often he makes contact and making sure it doesn't look slower. That's really it. Is the speed still there? And is he still making contact as often? And those are things you can pick up on in, like, I think 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I will cease worrying about Ichiro for 3 months.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the tricky thing with Ichiro, like you were sort of talking about, is that when you have a guy who succeeds in a way completely unlike anybody else, the only thing we're left to think in this day and age is that, okay, he's magic. So eventually somebody's going to figure out, like, the trick.
Right.
And they'll solve it. Like, some ass clown magician will go on TV and be like, oh, I reveal the secrets. And it's like, well, okay, now they figured out Ichiro. They finally found that hole in the swing that Bobby Valentine was talking about 11 years ago or whatever. But, like, with Pfister, definitely, and I was think about the Mariners starting staff, and I personally have less faith in Doug Pfister going forward than I do in Bedard and Pineda, one of whom is a rookie and the other of whom hasn't pitched for a year and a half or whatever in the major leagues because his body is literally generating antibodies against itself in the, like, shoulder and hip. Where, like, with Pfister, he's had a bad spring, whatever, he hasn't found his release point. Some people have bad springs, but like Ichiro, he succeeds in a way that I consider to be magic, but like a way worse kind of magic that isn't so impressive when it works. It's like, whoa.
It's magic without any skill. Because at least with Ichiro, you see the skill. You see how fast he is and how adept he is at handling the bat and his baseball instincts. And you can tell, okay, there's obviously skill. Doug Pfister stands on the mound and then throws this so pedestrian-looking fastball. I don't know what it is. And it's the sort of thing where it's like he could be succeeding basically because he's tall.
Yeah.
And he does a really good job of hiding the ball until the release point, which is 5 feet from home plate. And I can't pick that up because I don't get a batter's eye view of what facing Doug Pfister is like versus facing the 200 other pitchers. So I can't get that kind of comparison. That may be how he succeeds, and that may be repeatable.
Mm-hmm.
But I will never find that out, and I will never have faith in it.
Yeah, so basically Doug Fisher's skill set is that he's tall. Like, he was born that way. Well, he wasn't born that way. He was born genetically to become that way. And the neat thing about...
That was, like, one uncomfortable pregnancy.
And Mrs. Pfister, do you have tumors ever? No, those are just lumps from my baby. He's, like, in all parts of my body because he was born 6'8" tall. Like, the neat thing is, if Pfister's secret, like, if he's successful because he's tall... Tall is, like, the most sustainable skill that there is. Like, until you get to be my grandmother, like, Pfister, if that is it, then Pfister can pitch until he's 75 years old. But I don't think that's all that there is. And it's like what was I going to say? But he just has this slop, and maybe it's deception, but it's like, when he succeeds, when he gets an out, it's like, woo! Phew,
yeah.
Almost. Hey, you did it. It's like, if I went out to throw a major league inning, like, because I won some Make-A-Wish charity thing, except I don't have cancer, I don't think. Then they're like, okay, go out there. And I get, like, a long fly out and some pop outs. I wouldn't think, I'm good. I would think, well, that was fortuitous. So that's Doug Pfister, 200 innings a year. At no point, literally, have I ever thought, Doug Pfister just threw a really great inning. Never have I thought that. I've thought, that was okay to... Boy, are we lucky.
Right.
And it sucks, because statistically, we've both made the argument, all the numbers say we should believe in him. This is one of those stats versus eyes things, and maybe the stats are right, but man, he's not good on the eyes. So maybe this is what it is. Maybe Doug Pfister talks while he's in his windup, and the batters hear his awkward, giant voice, and they're like, whoa, this guy is really uncomfortable to listen to. I don't want to hear this. So they're like, they swing funny, kind of like they did against Cha Beck because of his facial expression.
Yeah, hitters were probably uncomfortably unnerved facing Cha Beck. Is there something behind me? This guy looks really scared. Oh, he's got one eye, like, what the hell's back there?
You know who was behind him? Giant Doug Pfister, talking like this. I'm Doug Pfister. Well, I can't do a Doug Pfister impression, but basically think of a weird voice that, like, a 17-foot-tall white guy would have, and that's Doug Pfister. It's not like the sexy, booming, deep voice that you expect from somebody's, like, tall and black. No, he's not that at all. You just watch that Pfister Vargas commercial over and over again. You can realize, like, wow, I bet nobody wants to make pleasant daily conversation with this guy.
Anyways, this should be a really, really interesting and fun season. As you can tell, I guess, by our upbeat attitude. Energetic.
Yeah, energetic about talking about how Doug Fister is on the brink of destruction.
Yeah.
It's clear, if there's one guy who's going to have Ryan Roland Smith or Ian Snell season this year, it's going to be Doug Fister. Not because he's walking everybody, but just because he's going to be so hittable that he'll basically be a position player pitching. That's what that would be. So I think Fister has, in terms of performance, Fister has the most downside, obviously, in terms of different kinds of performances, Bedard, just in case he gets hurt, whatever. But who knows? Maybe Fister's hurt right now. Maybe that's why he hasn't pitched well so far this year. I have no idea. I wrote about him visiting the DL in my little season interview just to be safe. But Doug, yeah, I don't know. Doug Fister's a strange dude. It'll be interesting to see how long he sticks in the majors. Can't wait to see what his career numbers look like.
Yes. And I think with that, we will leave you be. We'll be back sometime maybe next week. We have an off day before the super exciting home opener. We will be, whatever.
You're doing a great job of selling the next bit. We'll have another podcast.
We will have, stay tuned next time for the next Lookout Landing podcast with special guest Doug Fister.
Special guest Doug Fister. Can't wait to have him, since he won't be on the team anymore because he'll be terrible. He won't be terrible. Sorry, guys. He could be good. I hope he's good. Hope he's not starting the home opener. That would be weird.
No, it'll be Jason Vargas.
Woo! Jason Vargas. There's a guy I want to watch a lot from far away. The only way to watch him.
Yeah, because if you're too close, you smell his socks.
If you're too close, I'm pretty sure he turns you into a lesbian. That's the way that goes, right? I hope I didn't just offend our lesbian audience. Or a frog audience, because he's also a frog.
And Italian.
I forgot who it was. I think it... Well, you know what? I probably shouldn't mention the name of who I think it was. But maybe the best thing I heard about Jason Vargas is that he looks like he just had two kids.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jason. That's funny.
Yeah. So we will catch you next time, maybe next week or the week before. The week before. The week before would be now.
Go back and re-listen to this podcast.
This is meta. Yeah, next week or the week after, and have fun opening day. Go Mariners.
Woo! Baseball.
Mariners baseball. Ready to play. Ready to watch. More like it. See you guys.